Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Roy Edwards, and today I'm talking to Stephen Ferry, Managing Director of Pay360. Pay360 offers a complete payment eco-solution covering a breadth of payment options. This includes direct debits, points of sales, and telephone payments. Currently, it works with a variety of clients, such as WH Smith, FunkyPigeon.com, and PlusNet. The company provides a secure solution for its clients to offer seamless experiences across all payment channels. Today, we will discuss how digitalization is impacting on the customer experience within the payment solutions and how businesses can achieve a seamless digital experience for their customers. Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Roy, thank you for this opportunity today. I'm delighted to be here to have a fireside chat with you regarding anything to do with digitization and payments. So I really appreciate the opportunity.
Excellent. Could you tell me a little bit about yourself and also about Pay360?
Pay360 are part of the Capita family, and they're a very, very well established payment company. We've been around for more than 20 years. I've been in Capita for 6 years, and I've had a variety of roles of leadership running both a payments company, a mortgage origination company, and a wealth asset management company. So a wide experience within the financial sector. Specifically about Pay360, I think the key message I'd like to get across is about our depth and breadth of payment options. And we are very focused on creating better outcomes for our targeted markets, predominantly in the public sector, but we do have a range of specific private sector markets that we want to operate in. And the way we do that is we need to provide market-leading software. Security of payments is paramount, and it is about taking a full end-to-end journey. What I mean by that is looking at the onboarding aspect, which is obviously know your customer, anti-money laundering, then giving the widest payment provision possible, depending on the sector. We also do some value adds, which is about how we can enhance the collection of payments, but also how we can manage and protect the revenues of both our merchants and the customer. So I think, again, just specifically, it's about depth and breadth and being very targeted in where you play and operate. That's something that we have refined over the years, and in the last 6 years, we have very much refined that.
Digitalization's pretty much impacted all aspects of our lives in terms of the way we all work and how we rest and how we play. How has digitalization impacted on your business and particularly on payments?
That's a good question, because it's one that's actually moved very fast through the pandemic. Prior to the pandemic, it was obviously still there. But the key thing that I would like to call it is a couple of things. The consumer trend about how they want to operate, how they want to access information or access payments, and how they want to do things has definitely changed. So what that has meant for us is about how do we make our solutions more financially inclusive? To me, that's about how do you open up the access points that they want and what type of payment methods they want to operate. It's also been disruptive, and disruptive is a great enabler for change. Because of the way that digitization works, organizations such as Pay360 have had to look at that and say, right, how do we adopt a more nimble and agile approach to serving our customers? The examples I would give is you look at fintechs, their ability to break into the mainstream, such as challenger banks or new payment providers, they are driving some of the change that's happening in the payments world. And established organizations like Pay360 have had to adapt. We've also got to look at how we can be as nimble as they are, but also protect what we've got going forward. The other thing is about relevance. The need to stay relevant means you've got to look very carefully at the value and the propositions you bring to market. What we are seeing more of a demand is how can we automate and make it more seamless? Things like machine learning and artificial intelligence are becoming more mainstream. That's something that when I discuss with my chief product officer and our product managers, we are thinking, what is the next step that the consumer and the customer wish and desires for? Where in our value proposition can we actually embed it? The final thing I would say about digitization is we were a very cash society over the last 20, 30 years. Obviously, that has changed quite dramatically. we're seeing leaps and bounds changes now where cards you think are the mainstream, and they still are, MasterCard and Visa cards, but there's a real shift now. Cryptocurrency is becoming more relevant. It's not suitable for every customer or every merchant, but it's definitely becoming more relevant. Open banking is going to give more choices. That will also be disruptive to the card schemes such as MasterCard and Visa. It's a brilliant time to be in payments because of all the changes going on, but it is going back to being relevant.
It's interesting the point you make about the role of fintech and the impact they've had on the industry. What kind of impact do you think they actually have had on the payments industry?
It's been a positive impact because what you've seen happen is a lot of large organizations who have had very seasoned executives working for them, who have then decided to go into a startup, bring a wealth of experience. They also know how do you go after the white space. By going after the white space that's in a market, they usually bring something that's innovative. They're probably using, and they will be using, the latest technology from a product basis. What they do is they drive more established companies to really have to stay agile and flexible. Also make sure that wherever you're putting investment, the return is going to be there. So I think the valuable part of the payments ecosystem. The challenge that I see in the future is evident as we watch today. A lot of the fintechs who are startups don't get to what I call the full fruition. The reason I'm saying that is a lot of the larger, more established organizations like Amazon, Facebook, and bigger payment companies, they are taking advantage of fintechs having that agility and innovation. Before they get to be established, they are buying them out, and they then get subsumed into a larger established organization, and they may still create an environment where the creativity and innovation is still there. But my worry is we sometimes lose that opportunity to see them really flourish like we've had previously. There's lots of positives. There's lots of barriers maybe getting put in place. But when I engage with the fintech community in London, and it's a really, really vibrant one for payments, it's really interesting to speak to those individuals about what they're doing, how they're doing it. I'm a firm believer that you learn every day. That's why I spend a lot of my time networking with those organizations.
We've just gone through the whole coronavirus pandemic, which has had a massive impact in the way that sector operates, particularly the impact on online shopping and online marketing and digital marketing and the consumer. How has that been reflected in the payments sector? Because I know you've seen the mushrooming of new services like Buy Now, Pay Later, as well as a wide range of diverse payment types. How else has that actually impacted the payments sector as such?
It goes back to first principles. As an individual, as a consumer, how you wanted to act prior to the pandemic and how you have acted during the pandemic and how you will act going forward has changed. You are definitely more adaptable to embracing digital, whether that's digital first or mobile first. You're looking for more convenience in how you shop and how you actually interact online. You're definitely wanting it to be frictionless, and we'll come back to that in a minute. But you're also looking about the cost benefits, about how can you get more for your money, either as a merchant or as a consumer. Underpinning it all is we now value our time more than anybody. If you're going to provide a service, you've got to think, how can I make the time that our consumer is using that service or embracing it as sharp as possible? And it is about driving that convenience and what is the most preferred method of service. But underpinning it all, what that also means is it drives economy of scale. What we've seen is there's better ways to engage. It is about fostering the innovation that was present and is now getting developed. If you just look at some of the stats that are out there, like open banking, 94%, they say, of European consumers have adopted that as a method. They're not using it all today, but they're definitely adopting it. Then you look at, you mentioned buy now, pay later. If you take the stats that came out on Black Friday, 51% of people who actually bought something online and not on that day used the buy now, pay later option. That's a remarkable shift. Bear in mind that Klarna, who are obviously the market leader for that, they took a while to open up the UK market. They were obviously very, very big in the Scandinavian countries, and then they took it to the US. But it took them a few years to get adoption in the UK market. But they now got adoption. And again, we are now seeing that as a shift. As an example, from a Pay360 point of view, we looked at that trend and we've now implemented Klarna as a payment option on our payment platform because we now know that this is becoming mainstream. And also, if we don't provide it on our platform, our merchants will have less choice and there'll be less benefit. The customer's journey won't be as good and the customer experience will be limited. We've had to adapt as well. And it's something that obviously not everybody buys into buy now, pay later because of the debt aspect. And I'm also really welcome to see what Klarna have done in that recently is to give the option to pay all in one rather than the split payments. So I think that is important. But underpinning all this is customer engagement. People have had to understand about the customer more than ever. The time we've had during the pandemic has allowed businesses to really reflect about the customer journey and what the customer experience should look like.
Do you really think companies are getting it? Because there is a report from a company called Search Metrics, and it suggested that even large established sites like Walmart and social media sites such as Facebook, Instagram, and Pinterest were failing their own indexes. These were indexes in terms of usability and user experience and areas like site performance and speed. But do you really think companies in general are beginning to understand the importance of putting the customer at the center of what they're developing and ensuring there's a seamless customer journey from end to end?
It's a very good question. I can't comment for all companies, but the ones that are actually leading the charge, I do fundamentally believe that they've got the customer experience and the customer journey at heart. The challenge you've got sometimes is how that then interacts into a wider payment ecosystem. Because as you'll be aware, Roy, different parts of the payment ecosystem are done by different companies. So you've got the acquiring at one end, you've got the gateway at another, you've got the alternative payment methods, you've got a raft of different components. The skill, and this is where the skill and the differentiation comes from, is bringing that together. How do you make that a seamless and frictionless experience? That's where, when you look at solutions such as payment facilitation, which is something that Pay360 took on board about 18 months ago to become an established payment facilitator with a fully embedded payment solution that we embed into other people's software, that does get you closer to a one contract with a customer, a one user experience. But also what you get is you get the benefits from organizations like Pay360, where we're putting the investment in to make that payment journey more enriching. That, when you talk about being relevant, is really important to me. And that's why you've got to work very, very hard at that, because it's, I think you're right to say, from the search metric analysis, not everybody's getting it. Those who get it will definitely succeed and be more competitive. Those that don't see it as being valuable, they will fall behind. That is basically what competitive advantage is all about.
Exactly. What was interesting about Search Metrics report analysis was that some real big established companies who are actually failing their own audit. They weren't doing the page loads as effectively. The usability wasn't as seamless as it ought to be. And these were big established brands, which was pretty surprising. Just another thing, in terms of consumer experience has changed the landscape for commercial sectors. How do you think that's done? How do you think that's been reflected in this commercial sector?
In terms of how I think it's been done, it's having to meet the needs of the consumer and have that at the front and foremost. And it's about looking at new ways of working. It's about saying, what are the challenges that are faced going forward, whether it's compliance or whether it's the customer engagement? If I look at one area in particular, if I take hospitality, hospitality pre the pandemic was effectively a very, very much cash and card business. What we've now seen during the pandemic and now going forward has probably been the mainstream is the hospitality sector now really focuses on a mobile app or a tablet experience. You can actually pay for things before you get there, or you can pay for things at the table using a QR code. That's made, again, the customer experience far more greater, but also it'll make the expectation going forward that if I can do that in hospitality, why can't I do it in other sectors? And that will actually drive change and innovation in those sectors as well. We've had the perfect storm, and obviously it's been a very challenging period for all variety of reasons, whether it's the health of individuals or whether it's the revenues that people have expected to make or how they want to invest and the changes in the economics. But there has been some real value because people had to have to think really fast how to quickly adapt their business model to change it where people are working predominantly from home.
Just turning to B2B for a second, a recent McKinsey report suggested that 97% of B2B service buyers are willing to self-service in an ever-increasing amount of time and space. What they really, really want is that their complete customer journey must be as seamless and as effective as possible. And they expect that customer journey to be effortless, effectively. What does that mean for your sector in particular, the payment sector? It's a good point you raise, because I know often brands
bring in value to a business-to-business environment. The way we do that is how do we make both the journey that the payments has been taken, but also what it means from a business-to-business perspective. The way that I spoke previously about payment facilitation, that is the best way where you can have a seamless customer journey. Because if you can embed payments into another business's software and the user of that service, whether I'll use an example, it could be an accountancy software where they're doing all the accountancy stuff for you, but they're also being able to take the payment at the end of it. That, from a user experience, is a really good journey. Because you're not having to move from one page to another. You're not having to go from one area to another area to complete the journey. What it gives the options to reduce things like walkouts of the choice at the checkout, so the dropout. It gives the ability to commercialize and price things in a way that enables value for all parties. To me, given multiple options at the checkout, depending on what you're trying to do, whether it's direct debit, whether it's cards, whether it's alternative payment methods, whether it's open banking, that's what makes the user experience valuable at the end. But the other thing it does, if you get this right and you make it very seamless, your ability to make customers very sticky and retain them will be really at the heart of it. What all businesses want to do, they want to attract a customer, they then want to retain the customer, and the only way you can retain them is to make sure that they can see the value that's been delivered. I just know from what we're doing in that space that when I speak to independent software vendors who we are selling to, our payment facilitation solution called Evolve, what they're looking for is at the front end, they're looking for as much automation as possible. The automation is about how you can onboard a customer very, very fast. They also want all of the heavy lifting being done by somebody else. So that's being the KYC, the Know Your Customer, the anti-money laundering. They want other people to do that. The other part of the software, which is what their core business is, say it's accountancy, they can then focus on all their energy, making sure that is right, and allowing partners like Pay360 to add the value that we will bring from our payments experience and the way we can add value to their proposition.
It's a good point you raise, because I know often brands, organizations, they will spend a lot of time and effort looking at that customer journey and putting a lot of effort into the look and feel of key pages or key sections within that customer journey to develop that engagement. And then they leave payment as an afterthought at the back because they think, oh, it's just a simple configuration that we can just get Pay360 or their third-party payment organization partner to do without actually putting thoughts about how to retain, how to cross-sell, how to engage with customers even at that stage.
Yep, I agree with you totally, Roy. The other thing that's interesting, if you take loyalty programs, which have been around for quite a long time, what we're seeing now is more emphasis on loyalty programs for business to business. That just demonstrates the principle that you've got to have the customer at the heart.
Definitely. And also what's interesting, again, is B2B is beginning to imitate B2C, because for a long time it was the Cinderella of digital development, but suppliers are saying, no, we need equal treatment and we want to have those self-service tools available for us as anybody else. Can I ask you about another trend which is hitting sectors? It's a technology trend. It's the trend towards the composable architecture, microservice-based, API-based environment, ecosystems, whereby organizations can chop and change and adapt very specific applications to their infrastructure, as opposed to what they previously were doing was going to large monolithic platforms by well-recognized brands who provided an A to Z of all what they felt was all their service needs as such. Do you have any thoughts on that rise on that microservice-based, API-based, composable architecture trend?
Yeah, it's not a new trend. It's been around for about 5-7 years predominantly. It has actually changed the landscape of how companies like P360 look at our product architecture. We are like all organizations who've been in the industry for a long time. We do have a legacy of monolithic type payment architecture in certain places. But what we've adapted and moved forward to is we've definitely moved to the microservice approach. The reason we've had to do that is twofold. One, the complexity of the monolithic architecture becomes a real burden on costs and the ability to change quickly. So what we've looked at is how do we break it down? And that's the beauty of microservices. You break it down into small hundreds and hundreds of API nodes. You can then start to do things faster. You can deploy into production faster. But more importantly, it's how you integrate with other third parties. I know from experience that when we took our new solution Evolve to the market, one of the first things that prospective technologists who were looking at it said, how easy is it to integrate? What's your API framework? How does it hang together? Because we'd built it on Microsoft Azure cloud basis, working with APIs and making sure that it all linked together, we were able to present back to the community a very easy to integrate approach. It just means that there's a lot more effectiveness from both sides. So I think it's here to stay. The organizations that have adapted it the quickest is obviously fintechs, because they've recognized that they want to make this ease. Other organizations have taken longer to adapt, but we are probably 80% through the cycle now of most of our solutions have got an API first principle, but also moving away from the monolithic type deployments and how we do it. So as an example, in certain parts of payments, some companies might only do one or two releases a year. We are currently doing releases every week and every month. That's because we've got more confidence on the architecture. So I think it's here to stay. We've got to thank organizations like Microsoft, who've obviously helped to shape that and make it easier for organizations to do it in a seamless way. But there's also lots of open technology out there, open source style, that can help organizations, big or small, or new or established, to actually take the journey on. The other thing you've got to look at is the demographics of people who are coming into technology, into development. They are at the cutting edge of all this now, and things are moving at such a pace that it's adapt or die, and people have to adapt.
No, I totally agree. I think you're totally right when you say it's here to stay. It's irreversible. That's what increasingly businesses, irrespective of size, because initially it was just small businesses and medium-sized, but even large enterprises are beginning to embrace that approach and also incorporating when needed open source coding. But one of the possible Achilles heels to that trend is security. Because you're using so many different technical stacks for different, the security aspects of it then becomes that much more heightened. Why is implementing security measures so crucial, particularly in upholding cybersecurity? And what do you think those key measures are?
You've mentioned two things there. You talked about security and you've talked about cybersecurity. Cybersecurity is the biggest threat that most organizations face on a daily basis. On top of that, payment organizations such as P360, who are PCI DSS registered for payment card industry security standards, we're a custodian, first and foremost, of millions and millions of cards, of the details that cardholders have. And that comes with a level of responsibility, because we're entrusted with that by the merchants and then by the card users. We have to take that very, very serious, because if you have a data breach of that, you've also got the brand reputation, which is bad enough. You've got the opportunity to get a fine from the ICO, which could be 4% of your global revenues. But more importantly than that, it's the reputation and trust that you lose from the customer. That's why it's very, very important that everything you do when you're developing payments, security is up there as the number one priority, because you're trying to make it foolproof, which is always difficult in this world where you've got state nations and you've got hackers who want to look at it. But if you have that as a number one principle, then you look at things like customer experience and frictionlessness behind that, you can do that. To answer your second question, the measures are really very, very clear. It's very, very simple stuff, but even in today's world, there are still some organizations who don't do it well enough. Things like the use of passwords, multi-factor authentication, using the latest 3DS 2.2 or 2.1 for secure card authentication, how you actually build protection around, say, your websites by putting the firewalls in, the use of encryption wherever possible. But underpinning it all is the basics, and the basics is education and training. In Pay360, we spend a lot of time educating and training our staff about not making what we call the own goals, about not releasing data when we shouldn't be, about making sure that you don't click on a link if you don't know what the origination of it is. We also spend a lot of time on compliance and monitoring the training of those aspects. We've got a responsibility to do that. And likewise, everybody in the world's got a responsibility to make sure we all play our part to reduce the cybersecurity risks that are there. Things like in the old days, you tailgated somebody through an office and you gained access. That still happens, but it happens in a more obtuse way because they do it in a way where they send you a friendly email or they send you an email that gives a sense of urgency that you've got to do something. You've actually got to think before you act. If you get that education part right, we should be in a better place. The final part is there's a lot of investment required to protect yourself from a cybersecurity attack, from distributed denial of service approach, making sure you've got the most optimum of software and you are confident that the organization you're placing that trust in is investing on the right tools and the right technologies. The right tools and technologies for that are things like machine learning and artificial intelligence to look at how you continually learn about the attack that's taking place and how you then adapt. But for me, this is the one that will either make an organization grow and compete or one that will push it back. And examples that you could see in the marketplace is the attack, the issue that British Airways had a few years ago, that took them a long time to recover from that. You only look at what happened with Facebook recently, where they had that period of outage. It's very, very subtle things that can happen, but the impact and the damage it can have can take years to recover from.
How much time do you guys, in terms of your staff and your consultants, spend with your clients in terms of educating them on these matters? Because again, it's still remarkable. I will go into an organization, I see for myself open security flaws. It's obvious to me as an outsider, but it's just not obvious to them. I don't know if it's a cultural thing. Are you able to evaluate how much time or effort you actually spend supporting?
The way I can evaluate it or just give you an insight is this year alone, and we're nearly at the end of our fiscal year, we have run a number of webinars on security, particularly on payment card security. And whether it's about what we do from a voice security aspect or whether it's about how we do card security through 3DS2, we spend a bit of time on that, on webinars. We've also run focus groups where we're trying to raise awareness. And then the final area is we've published a number of case studies and white papers. It's about raising awareness first and foremost, but underpinning it is giving them some education. And then finally, we hope that it stimulates a conversation in an organization that says, you know what, I probably need to do a little bit more thought of this. We've also got some really, really bright individuals who are highly qualified in the space, who are subject matter experts. So if the organization has not got their own capability or capacity, we can put in one of our individuals who's got that skill and capability to at least share what we class as the best practice. The one thing I would say is it's not always about what Pay360 can offer. There'll be certain areas where we will offer best of breed partners to say, if you're thinking about this is the real problem you've got and the problem statement, we are probably not the best organisation to help you. For payment cards and that, yes, we are. For things like the distributed denial of service, there are better organisations who've got better tools who you should be speaking to. But it is about collaborating, and collaborating is a great thing. But to put a definitive number on it would be very challenging. But I know we're doing a lot, and I obviously think we could do more, because this is the most material threat that we have. It does impact the economics of the organisation you're selling to, and also your own organisation. So it is up there as a major component.
Just my final point is, and apologies, this is a bit of a how long is a piece of string type question. What 3, 4, 5 things or components or issues, what activities would you recommend to a brand, a retailer, to remain competitive in today's market, particularly in terms of protecting revenues and payments in particular?
Good question, Ryan. I think we'll probably take it into sort of 3 strands, as you've asked. Fundamentally, you've got to know your customer challenges and pain points. If you do not know what the challenges today are or the challenges going forward, your ability to remain relevant and focused on your own core strengths and or build what we call the partnerships that's going to take it forward is going to be diminished. So really knowing the customer challenges and pain points. The way to do that is to have enough touch points and engagement points that are two-way. So it's not about telling, it's actually probably more about the listening and understanding what is causing the pain today and what they think the pains could be tomorrow, knowing what they're doing. On top of that, you've then got to look at the digital and social inclusion. When you talk about what are you trying to achieve from a payments journey, and making sure that you're digitally relevant and you're looking at all aspects of the social community. The example I would give there is, not everybody wants to pay in the digital world. Some people still want to pay cash. So as an organisation, how can you make sure you've got that option that cash can still be paid, or different approaches? That is something that you need to be mindful of, but you still need to have that opportunity. The second area is about innovation. Whether you're a retailer or whether you're a provider like Pay360, both organisations have to look at themselves and say, right, what will we need to do to stay ahead of the game? If you invest the right amount of time and focus about knowing who you are and who you serve, you can actually then hopefully get to what is the right proposition. You've got to avoid what I call the own goal, is trying to serve everybody, because that really only works at enterprise level. In a smaller world of an SME, you've got to think, right, who is the end customer that I can win? Will I be competitive enough? Will I be differentiated enough to do it? The final area, which we talked about a minute ago, has to be security. You need to keep ahead of the risks. You need to focus on the customer data. It's paramount. And you want to build consumer trust. If you get that right, those three will mean that you should stay relevant. You should still be able to work and move forward. What is a very dynamic, also a very rewarding environment, because it's rewarding because it's exciting. And it's exciting because the opportunity is there to do something good in this world, whether it's providing payments to those who are socially disadvantaged, or whether it's providing payments for those who want to look at different ways of taking payments. So I think it's a very, very exciting time for payments. And digitization, which is at the start of this conversation, is here to stay, and it keeps you on edge. Being on edge is useful, but also being curious about what you're doing is useful. And my final say is, employ the best people you can to be curious, but make sure they can turn that curiosity into something that is going to take your business forward.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you.